Hello and welcome to Savor, a production of iHeartRadio. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum. And today we are finally doing an episode about burgers.
Yes, hamburgers. And there's a lot of excitement in this recording because super producer Andrew, I think we've said before, but his avatar is a hamburger.
Yes.
It has a face that you can't really make out the emotion.
Yeah, it's like the tabula rasa of anthropomorphic burgers. Credit to him for that specific phrasing, because he you can really fill in whatever expression
you can. And hilariously, sometimes my Skype freezes on an image of him, and so I don't see you.
Oh,
I see burger
just
face.
The burger.
And the judgment I feel, and it's all on me. The expression's not changing, but
it can be very judgy, though.
It's hard to have a serious conversation about what interfood here while this hamburger just looms.
We also just like burgers. We're just excited about this topic. We've been waiting on it because we knew it was going to be a little bit of a bear.
And it is and was. Yes. But we decided to finally do it because of a little TV show you might have heard of or might not have called Supernatural.
That's right, folks. If you didn't know this about me and Annie, we are both Supernatural fans. Annie got me into it, actually. During this, our quarantine time, I watched 15 seasons of a television show that I had never seen before, particularly. I just watched them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I loved getting your updates. It was very fun for me. And over on Stuff Mom Never Told You, I also got my co-host over there, Samantha, into it. So it's been really fun.
Oh, yeah.
To, like, watch this unfold.
Would it just be like Sam would send you a message and then, like, I don't know, like a month later when I finally caught up to where she had been, like, it was like, Cass talked about tortillas, lols. Like,
yes.
Cool. All right.
And it was
great.
The most random thing. So I loved it. So this show's been on the air for 15 years. It's currently on the CW. And as we record this, there are only 2 episodes left until the series finale.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I've been watching this show on TV since it first started. I was in high school. So it is I feel like already a momentous goodbye, Supernatural.
Yeah, that's a lot. That's a whole lot. So, that's emotional. You've grown up with these characters.
I have. The running joke is that this TV show would be in high school right now.
Oh, geez. Oh, no.
Yeah. I used to tape it. I'd send it to my friends, and I converted so many of my friends to fans. I wrote fan fiction. I read fan fiction. I rewatched certain episodes over and over again. I have my favorites, and I cried many times. I cried.
Oh, yeah. Oh. It's an emotional show. There are 2 or 3 emotions at least.
Yes. We thought, in honor of the show coming to an end, we thought we would do an episode on one of the show's most prominent foods, hamburgers.
Oh, yeah. And if y'all are unfamiliar with this show, no shade. It's very silly in a very enjoyable way, I will say. But seriously, like one of the main characters, Dean, is seen eating or talking about hamburgers in, like, most episodes. I'd say more than half. I'd say way more than half of the episodes of this show, a burger shows up, either in person or in spirit. No spirit pun intended. The show has an official cookbook called Burgers, Pies, and Other Bites from the Road, published in 2019. It does feature 3 burger recipes.
Ah, yes. And I gave this to Samantha as a gift. Yeah. I had a lot of pie recipes, too, which was also a contender for this.
Mm-hmm.
And I did want to mention that a couple of years ago, I did a road trip across the United States to California and all over. Me and my friends were trying to, no joke, escape a tornado while we were in Kansas. And
oh my gosh.
Ended up in Lawrence, Kansas, which is where the brothers in the show are born. And I was standing at the window and you see this like menacing sky and all these lightning bolts. And I was like, this feels right. This feels right. It all worked out. So I don't often crave hamburgers, but when I do crave them, I swear it is unlike any other craving to humankind to me. It is way stronger than my typical craving. My mom used to make these homemade burgers when we were at the beach. And after a day of playing in the water, they were the best damn thing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I bet. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good solid food.
And a few years ago, I did a burger tour of Atlanta, and it was amazing, and it was so good. I think I did 7 restaurants, so.
Oh, my gosh. Oof.
Yeah. Ooh, and I ran my first half marathon. After I ran it, I got the legendary in Atlanta Sublime Donut Burger at Cypress Street, which is what you think it is. It's a burger. I think it's a cut in half donut, so it's not 2 donuts.
It's not 2 donuts. It's only a single donut. Okay, that makes it way more reasonable. Oh, my heck.
Thank you. I want to be clear. I could have eaten 2 of them. I was so hungry, but it was really good.
Oh, wow. I've never had like a stunt burger like that. I love a burger, sure, yeah. And I agree with you that when the craving does come, it is a strong craving.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just all that I want in the universe. And there are a lot of very good burgers here in Atlanta. One of them, the H&F burger, Holman & Finch burger, gets like national press still about how tasty
it is.
It's a good burger. That is now my favorite style of burger. It's the 2 thin patties, 2 slices of cheese melted. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of and just thin and crispy, and it gets so nice. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Oh, no.
The craving.
Yeah, looking at so many pictures of burgers while I was reading about this was exquisite torture.
Yes. Oh yeah. I did want to mention in here, I think I've told this story before, but when I was in high school, we did like a trip to France and, some people are nervous about trying new foods and they want to try, something more familiar to them.
Sure.
A couple people in our group, we were at a restaurant and they ordered hamburger américain and it was just raw ground beef, which to this day, I think of like, was that a joke? I don't know that it was bad by any means. Is it the fact that it's called that? Is it?
So it wasn't like a steak tartare. It wasn't
it could have been because I wasn't very familiar with that at the time. But it was like a pretty big. It was like a patty of raw ground beef, and it had like onions and vinaigrette, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yeah, that sounds more towards the tartare region of space. So that, I mean, still surprising, I'm positive, for your young cohorts, but
yes. Oh, I remember it. I remember it well.
did they eat it?
I don't think they did, but a couple of us tried it.
Yeah.
It was pretty good. I remember it actually being pretty good.
Yeah.
But no, they didn't. And the funny thing is they might have ordered that seafood salad and that was also like raw seafood.
Oh,
it was a very,
Yeah.
A very silly time for all of us.
The time when as a young American who grew up in the 90s or early 2000s, you go like, oh, not everyone cooks meat the way that we do here in America.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Like all the way through all the time intensely.
Mm-hmm.
National Hamburger Day is May 28th.
Yes, and that's when I did my hamburger tour.
Oh, there you go.
That whole week. And related to this episode, you can see our episode on Salisbury steak. Also, we did one on alternative meats and our McDonald's episode and our episodes on ketchup and mustard. So there's a lot to
a lot of connections.
In.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Which I suppose brings us to our question.
Yes. Hamburgers. What are they?
Well, a hamburger is a type of sandwich that may include a great number of things, but I'd say that the essence of the hamburger is this. A patty of ground seasoned protein served on a not oblong bread bun. To me, it was very important to distinguish the oblong from the not oblong. It can be square or circular.
But not oblong.
Not oblong. I would posit that if it's a different type of bread or if the protein is not ground, it's a different kind of sandwich.
This is a tricky... Sometimes I don't envy that you are the one that must define these things because it's a bit of a tricky territory.
It is. It is. And I'm sure that someone's going to have a very valid argument. I have seen other things called burgers on menus, like a chicken burger that's a chicken breast. Or... like a burger, like the one that you had with a donut for a bun. But I feel like that's like clearly like a parody, like satire kind of territory. Mm. So that's allowed.
Oh, good. I don't know why I'm like relieved to hear that.
I am. And despite the fact that it's called a hamburger, the type of protein least likely to be ground up in the sandwich is probably ham. The ham part of hamburger is a whole entomological thing. We're going to get into it later. The most traditional is ground beef, but chicken, turkey, soy, black bean-based patties, all of these are all common. Lamb and pork certainly aren't unheard of. You might mix sausage in there, you know. I'm not going to argue with you about your ground meat. Ground protein of whatever kind you want, I think, is fair game.
But not the oblong. No.
You know, I just think it's a different sandwich.
And I like that you're like clearly thinking about this. You put some thought into it.
I have. And okay. And this is, to be fair, side note, one of my favorite sandwiches is called the Roman burger. And this is a Midwestern thing that's on a sub-length bun, and it has burger patties and cold cuts and, like, lettuce, tomato, oil and vinegar, salt and pepper. But I wouldn't classify it as a burger.
Mm-hmm.
I really am putting a lot of thought into this right now.
You are. I appreciate it. I'm on the same page. I agree.
Okay. All right, I'm glad that we've reached a quorum here. Yeah,
we have. Very important.
So to make this protein patty, typically some kind of binders are mixed in there to make it all stick together. Beaten egg, breadcrumbs, stuff like that. Seasonings can vary widely, but salt, pepper, Worcestershire sauce, and onion or garlic are a few common additions. Patties can be made thick or thin. Sometimes, as I was saying earlier, two or three thin patties might be stacked to form a single unit of burger.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes thick patties.
Oh, sure.
Creative.
Yeah.
Here.
Yeah. Mix it up. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The most traditional cooking method is grilling or griddling the patty. The bun might also be toasted on the cooking surface, and I think it should be, personally. In terms of toppings, you don't have to have any toppings, but also, like, is there... This is another serious question. Is there anything that is just flat out definitely not a burger topping?
Oh, that is a good question. Well, now I'm going to be thinking about this because I keep being like, well, sushi, but no,
but
I can see it.
I could
marshmallows,
see it.
Ice, okay.
Yeah, I mean, in general, sweeter things, probably less, but I wouldn't put it past someone.
Oh no.
And furthermore, I guess the best argument I could make is that if there's a bone in meat, that would like obfuscate the purpose of the sandwich.
What is this sandwich's purpose?
Which is to be picked up and eaten.
Maybe like watermelon or mango? No, mango could be on it.
Mango would totally be tasty on it. Yeah. Or like compressed watermelon on. I could see it. Anyway, okay. That said, your standard spread of toppings and condiments for burgers include the salad stuff, like leaves or shreds of lettuce, slices of tomato, and sliced or diced onion. Your cheese, sliced cheese or crumbled cheese, either added to the top of the patty at the end of grilling to melt or afterwards as you're building the sandwich. And then your condiments, ketchup, mustard, mayo, and pickle relish or sliced pickles. Both of these of the cucumber pickle variety. Another common condiment is burger sauce, or sometimes called special sauce, which is a combo of mayo, ketchup, and mustard that's seasoned with salt, pepper, maybe like hot sauce or pickle juice or paprika or Worcestershire or other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's a homebrew kind of thing.
And a lot of restaurants have funny names for what I think is that. Like,
oh, yeah.
Rocket sauce is one.
Right.
And you're always kind of like, what is that?
They're like, secret sauce. I'm like, is it?
You can't have it removed. It's important to the burger experience. Okay.
They can be an annoying item to come up on the line, especially when a lot of people are ordering them to do them really, really correctly. So I get that having modifications is a pain on stuff like that, but man.
Yeah. I love it when it's like, absolutely no, and it's all caps, no substitutions.
Yeah. Or change. Yeah. None. And I'm like, I know it says that, but I shouldn't eat onions because they make me really angry on the insides of my insides. Can I get no onions? And they're like, of course. And I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
There's caps lock on your menu. I don't know. Anyway. and then, okay. So those are the basic toppings. Mm-hmm. But things that I ran across just today as I was reading about burgers that you can put on top of burgers include, but are not limited to, because I got tired after a certain point, slices of avocado, bacon, cooked or pickled onions, deep fried onion rings, a fried egg, french fries, fried oysters, I don't know, spread some like pate or foie gras on there, deli meat, pulled pork, brisket, short ribs, oil and vinegar, hot sauce, pineapple, coleslaw, mac and cheese, any kind of cheese, barbecue sauce, jalapenos, fried jalapenos, sauteed mushrooms, guacamole, grilled eggplant, chili, like the like soup stew dish chili.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. And shaved truffles.
You know, I'm amazed and a little embarrassed at how many of those I have had. I was nodding like, yep.
You're like, oh, yeah, check.
Got
okay.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, so there's this kind of separate but related to what we've just been talking about category of just like ridiculous on purpose burgers. And a lot of these days, having like run the gamut of toppings are playing with the idea of the bun. So you've got your donut bun, your waffle bun, your fried pucks of mac and cheese bun, your fried pucks of cooked ramen noodles bun, your whole grilled cheese sandwiches bun.
Oh, no. Oh, no. I think I've had most of those, too. Oh, dear. I need to take stock of some things.
I mean, but in like a good way or a bad way. I mean, you're living life. You, Annie, like Dean Winchester, are just like, you know, who knows where this life is going to take me? Might as well enjoy it.
Might as well try these fried mac and cheese buns. Why not? We have, I think we've mentioned, we have a restaurant in Atlanta, the Vortex, that kind of, this is their thing.
Yeah.
We have
a
couple of restaurants that have specific burgers that are their kind of gimmicky wild burger.
The Vortex has the bypass system, the single, double, and triple bypass.
I've seen friends undertake it. I have not done that.
Oh gosh. Oh good. That's good. I always worry about stunt eating. I'm like, oh, I mean, I don't know. Like, I also have a friend who was just like, oh, this is good. Boop. Like,
yeah. Yeah. I mean, my friend did it like that, too. I did get to try a bite, and that was nice because I didn't want to do the thing. And people who don't know, you can look it up. It is quite an undertaking.
Oh, and yeah.
It comes with fries.
Oh, so. Yeah. Which is a thing that burgers are frequently paired with a side of French fries. Because the result of all of this combined is going to be this just highly customizable sandwich that can be as cheap and simple or expensive and fancy or silly and messy or small or huge as you want to make it. But the baseline experience of a hamburger is that it's soft with maybe like a little bit of crunch. And salty and fatty and savory, maybe with some contrasting flavors for the toppings. It is such a comfort food. Often served for lunch or dinner, can be for breakfast if you want to make it so. A side of French fries, maybe a soda pop or beer or milkshake.
Ugh, I have such fond memories of back when our local baseball team still played in Atlanta. Sometimes as a kid, my dad would take us and we would bring in like this whole cooler of Crystal Burgers, which are not by any means a burger I would ever get. No shade on anyone who loves them. Uh-huh, but there was just something about it that was so like, tasted so good in the heat. Very nostalgic, I get for that.
Yeah.
But okay, what about the nutrition, Lauren?
It can range. Okay, I'll say that if you're looking at a beef burger, the beef is usually right around 20% fat content so that it doesn't dry out as it cooks. And especially if you're griddling that with additional oil or butter, that's going to be a pretty calorie-dense food right there. The white bread that the bun is made of isn't a health food. Mayo and cheese and all those other toppings and side dishes can really add up to just a whole bunch of fat and salt. However, it's also got a great punch of protein. You've got some baseline vitamins and minerals in there from the meat, maybe a smattering of extra stuff from the toppings. And it's almost always healthier than a fried chicken sandwich on a menu. Because deep frying stuff is horrifying. That's just a horrifying thing to do to a thing, nutritionally speaking.
But delicious.
Delicious. Nutritionally horrifying. Watch your portion sizes. Eat a vegetable. Be aware that the sillier that you get with it, the more it's a treat. And that's fine.
Yeah.
Treats are nice.
They are nice.
Mm-hmm. Mm. And I will put in here that the alternate proteins are not necessarily healthier. Sometimes they are, but just like read your nutrition facts if they're provided. Sometimes a turkey or chicken burger, it has a very, very, very similar fat profile content. So if health is the only reason that you're making that purchase, then it might not be doing you any good.
Yes. Always a proponent of reading the label.
Uh-huh.
Hamburgers are a big business, as these numbers show.
Yeah, as of back in 2012, and I think it's holding pretty steady today, the burger industry was worth some $70 billion in the United States.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
That year in a survey, 89% of consumers reported having a restaurant burger at least once a month. And almost half reported having one at least once a week.
Dang.
And although overall meat consumption in the U.S. has been dropping, burger sales do not seem to be suffering. As of 2019, quick service restaurants in the U.S. were serving 6.4 billion beef burgers per year. About a quarter of a billion veggie-based burgers. So.
Wow. That's a lot. That's a lot.
Yep. Yep. but we are not the only ones who love burgers, and we're not even the people who love burgers the most.
What?
I know. In 2015, France ate 1.2 billion burgers, about 14 per person per year. Russia was tied with them. Germany ate 11 per capita. Japan and Spain, 8 per capita. Italy, 7 per capita. And at the top were the UK with 23. The U.S. with 30, and Australia with 38 burgers per person per year.
Wow. Wow, Australia. I mean, I know I had burgers when I was in Australia, but I know I've mentioned this before. I probably was trying to get the things I thought I couldn't get elsewhere. So I don't recall. There were a lot of barbecues, though, and hamburgers are a great barbecue food.
Yeah, or grill out food. Sure, sure. Mm-hmm. It's true. It's true. We just grilled some burgers the other night here at home.
Ugh, jealous. I think the last time I had a hamburger was Memorial Day.
Oh my gosh. So
it's been a minute for me. And I'm the craving. I'm trying to fight it off, but I can feel it. Oh, but that will have to wait because we have so much history for you.
Oh my heck, we do. And we will get into that as soon as we get back from a quick break for a word from our sponsor.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
So, the history of the hamburger is very murky. especially depending on how one defines a hamburger.
Yeah.
Which can vary.
Mm-hmm.
Can and does. But depending on that definition, they can go way, 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 way back. Ground meat shaped into patties dates back to ancient times, and they were eaten all around the world.
Mm-hmm.
Ancient Rome had a recorded burger-like meat patty recipe all the way back to 1st century CE, and ancient Egyptians recorded eating something similar. At the time, it was probably a food for the rich. The task of making them wasn't easy or cheap. And there's a really interesting Smithsonian article that I was jealous of because part of the article was trying all these recipes and deciding,
cool.
Like, is it, would I call this a burger?
Is this a burger or not really? Yeah. Oh,
yes.
Fun, though.
And the conclusion that article arrived at was what the real game changer was, like meat choppers.
Oh, sure. Right. Absolutely.
So before that came along, if you were doing this ground meat thing, it was much more arduous.
Yeah.
So, according to legend, Genghis Khan and his army would place patties of ground meat under the saddles of their horses to tenderize the meat as they rode. And it was typically leftover mutton or lamb, kind of tougher pieces, which they would eat raw when ready, I guess, when they were hungry. And when Kublai Khan's army invaded Moscow beginning in 1238 CE, they kept this up. They were still doing it. And the Russians picked it up, too. They called it steak tartar because they called the Mongols Tartars, which over the years cooks refined into what we think of it today. Meanwhile, Europeans viewed minced beef as a delicacy in the 15th century, and this minced beef was sometimes made into sausage. In the 1600s, ships originating from Hamburg, Germany, began making the journey to Russia for trade, and through this, steak tartare arrived in Germany, where it was called tartar steak. And Hamburg was known for its high-quality beef and beef in general, and I know our listeners are very, very smart, and you're already putting together the pieces. German ports were Europe's largest ports during the 18th century, and this tartar steak from Hamburg was brought to New York, where people called it Hamburg steak. Enterprising street vendors began selling, quote, steak cooked in the Hamburg style in New York City Harbor. At the same time, immigrants to the U.S. from German-speaking areas, of course, brought with them their favorite cuisines, including Hamburg steak. And this was usually something eaten by the lower class, a mixture of low-grade beef, local spices, eaten either raw or cooked. And this salted and sometimes smoked meat was a pretty good food for making this long transatlantic journey. Since the meat used was often tough, to help make it last longer, folks sometimes would add minced onion and soaked breadcrumbs that they formed into these patties. Upon arriving to the U.S., many of these immigrants kept making these patties, but now with fresh meat, if it was available to them. And they were perhaps surprised to find Hamburg steak was already popular in New York. So these two things were kind of happening at once.
Yeah.
In 1758, Hannah Glass's cookbook, The Art of Cookery Made Plain and Easy, featured a recipe for Hamburg sausage, calling for a mixture of beef, spices, and suet, with the recommendation of serving with toasted bread, implying that German immigrants had brought their meat traditions, recipes to England, and/or English people returning to England after visiting Germany did. When this book was published in the U.S. a little bit later, it had the slightly altered Hamburg sausage recipe in it. In 1802, the Oxford English Dictionary defined hamburger as, quote, a hard slab of salted minced beef, often slightly smoked, mixed with onions and breadcrumbs.
And I love that they specify hard slab here because because one of the defining characteristics of a burger to me is that it's soft. So where this hardness was coming in, I'm confused about, but
we have questions. The exact origin of grilling and the bread aspects of the burger are difficult to pinpoint, though, but historians believe it happened in the late 1800s, probably another innovation of immigrants. A part of this was the invention of mechanical meat choppers. That same time, one of the first, if not the first, quote, meat cutter was patented in the U.S. in 1829. That was followed soon after by an 1845 patent for, quote, improvement in machines for cutting sausage meat. Great title. I love it. And in 1897, quote, the universal food chopper hit the market. It was featured in the Sears Roebuck catalog, which was a big deal at the time. And these meat grinders were key to making a hamburger a hamburger. Like when we think of hamburger, these meat grinders.
Yeah. Yeah.
That, huge.
That texture and small grain of the meat that makes it so so tender and easy to chew is part of all of that.
Yeah, and in that Smithsonian article, they, like I said, they pinpointed that as the changing point. And the recipes previous to that, they said they would call more like a steak sandwich or something and less a hamburger. Hamburger steak or hamburger beef steak started appearing on menus in the 1800s. They typically cost 10 cents. They also started appearing in American cookbooks in 1840. Mrs. D.A. Lincoln's The Boston Cookbook had two relevant recipes, Hamburg steak and broiled meat cakes.
Broiled meat cakes. Gosh.
In 1876, a German restaurant offered thousands of Hamburg-style steaks at the Philadelphia Centennial Exposition.
And this was a big deal. This is where a lot of Americans were exposed to this idea of a hamburger.
Mm-hmm. And the timing has to do with industrialization. As many Americans moved into factory work, they wanted cheap, convenient lunch options. I feel like this comes up in almost every one of our sandwich episodes. And these lunch options were frequently purchased from nearby food carts. Sandwich's whole thing is convenience.
Yeah.
You can carry it in your hands. When these food carts upgraded to gas grills, some of them started offering Hamburg steaks, which people really liked, but they were hard to eat until vendors started putting them between bread. And I will say, I know we've also said this in several episodes, probably this was, it just made sense. And a lot of people discovered this around the same time.
Simultaneously and independently. Yeah. They were just like, huh, Hamburg steak, thing we like. Sandwiches, thing we like. Cool. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
But that doesn't mean that there aren't so many impassioned origin stories.
Oh, so many. I think this might be the most we have in an episode. I love it. So, yes, most legends of the American hamburger are just that. American food legends told by later generations without much to back it up. That's not to say they're not necessarily true.
Oh, sure.
But there's just not a lot of evidence, and there's a lot of claims.
Yeah, hard to prove. Lots of claims. Yeah.
Yes, but we're gonna look at a few of these claims because they're very fun.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start with Seymour, Wisconsin. So, go back to 1845 in Seymour, Wisconsin, and a young man named Charlie Negreen. According to this story, Charlie was working selling meatballs at a county fair, but he noticed people were having issues eating them while they walked around the fair. So he got the idea to flatten the meatballs and put them between bread, and he called it a hamburger. This earned him the nickname Hamburger Charlie, and he and his hamburgers were staples at this county fair until he died in 1951. He even had a jingle. Hamburgers, hamburgers, hamburgers hot. Onions in the middle, pickle on top. Makes your lips go flippity-flop. Yeah. Seymour is so confident about being the home of the first hamburger. They call themselves the home of the hamburger. They built a hamburger hall of fame dedicated to Charlie Negrin and his hamburger, and they have an annual hamburger festival the first Saturday in August.
Love it.
And it, I know, it sounds so fun. There's, of course, a hamburger eating contest, but also a bun toss, a ketchup slide, and the, quote, world's largest hamburger parade.
Wow. Oh, that's great.
And, oh, it gets better. In 2007, Seymour's legislature made this all official. And Lauren, I would ask you to join me in a dramatic reading.
Sure, absolutely. I'd love to.
All right. Whereas Seymour, Wisconsin is the right home of the hamburger, and
whereas other accounts of the origination of the hamburger trace back only so far as the 1880s, while Seymour's claim can be traced to 1885, and
whereas Charles Negrin, also known as Hamburger Charlie of Seymour, Wisconsin, began calling ground beef patties in a bun hamburgers in 1885, and
whereas Hamburger Charlie first sold his world-famous hamburgers at age 15 at the first Seymour Fair in 1885, and later at the Brown and Outagamie County Fairs, and
whereas Hamburger Charlie employed as many as 8 people at his famous hamburger tent, selling 150 pounds of hamburgers on some days, and
whereas the hamburger has since become an American classic enjoyed by families and backyard grills alike, now, therefore, be it
resolved by the Assembly, the Senate concurring, that the members of the Wisconsin legislature declare Seymour, Wisconsin, the original home of the hamburger.
Gosh.
And scene.
Oof.
And there's even an official website, homeofthehamburger.com. So the case is closed. But hold on.
Okay.
It is not closed.
Oh.
Brothers Frank and Charles Minchez out of Akron, Ohio, would disagree. According to this version of the story, the Minchezes invented the hamburger during the 1880s while they were traveling in a concession circuit to various events throughout the Midwest, like county fairs. When they ran out of pork for their sandwich patties while at a fair in Hamburg, New York, on a particularly hot day, butchers had stopped butchering hogs because it was so hot. But one of the butchers suggested they swap out the pork for beef. So they did, mixing the beef with coffee, which I find interesting, spices, and brown sugar. I assume they grilled it, but I couldn't confirm. I'm almost 100% sure that they did, though. And then served it between bread. When asked what it was called, the brothers allegedly glanced around panically, like, oh, what are we going to call it? And they saw the festival banner, saw Hamburg, New York, and went with hamburger. Hamburger. When the Los Angeles Times ran Frank's obituary in 1951, they credited him as being the hamburger's inventor. In 1985, Hamburg held their first Burger Fest to commemorate 100 years since this supposed happy event. I think a historian in the town discovered it, clippings of this or something. The Minchez family discovered the hamburger recipe and opened Minchez Brothers Restaurant to serve the birders in Akron in 1991. And in 2005, Akron held the first annual National Hamburger Festival. So the case is closed. Nope. Nope. It's nuts. Let's go now to 1891 in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and one Oscar Weber Bilby. According to his family, he was the first to add the hamburger bun into the mix. So they specifically claimed the bun.
Right, right. As yes. opposed to just slices of bread, like
exactly.
chunks.
Exactly.
Or like Fools. A patty melt, which is what I would call that. I would just call that a patty melt.
Mmm. Patty melt. Future episode.
Ooh, yeah.
yes. A travel writer named Michael Wallace did this whole deep dive into the claim of this family in 1995 and determined that Bilby was responsible for our modern idea of the American hamburger.
Okay.
Yeah, according to the interview he conducted with Harold Bilby, printed in Wallace's article, Welcome to Hamburger Heaven, quote, Grandpa himself told me that it was in June of 1891 when he took up a chunk of iron and made himself a big old grill. Then the next month on the 4th of July, he built a hickory wood fire underneath that grill. And when those coals were glowing hot, he took some ground Angus meat and fired up a big batch of hamburgers. When they were cooked all good and juicy, he put them on my Grandma Fanny's homemade yeast buns, the best buns in all the world, made from her own secret recipe. He served those burgers on buns to neighbors and friends under a grove of pecan trees. They couldn't get enough, so Grandpa hosted another big feed. He did that every 4th of July, and sometimes as many as 125 people showed up.
Huh.
Wow.
Well, okay.
And you'll never believe it, Lauren. That same year, Oklahoma's legislator declared, and please join me in another dramatic reading. Whereas scurrilous rumors have credited Athens, Texas, as the birthplace of the hamburger, claiming for that region south of the Red River, commonly known as Baja, Oklahoma, a fame and renown which are hardly its due. And
whereas the legislature of Baja, Oklahoma, has gone so far as to declare April 3rd, 1995, to be Athens Day at the state capitol, largely on the strength of this bogus claim. And
whereas, while the residents, the scenery, the hospitality, and the food found in Athens are no doubt superior to those in virtually any other locale, they must be recognized, in the words of Mark Twain, as, quote, the lightning bug is to lightning when compared with the great city of Tulsa in the great state of Oklahoma. And
whereas, although someone in Athens in the 1860s may have placed cooked ground beef between two slices of bread, this minor accomplishment can in no way be regarded comes on a bun, accompanied by such delight as pickles, onions, lettuce, tomato, cheese, and, in some cases, special sauce. And
whereas the first true hamburger on a bun, as meticulous research shows, was created and consumed in Tulsa in 1891 and was only copied for resale at the St. Louis World's Fair a full 13 years after that momentous and history-making occasion.
Now, therefore, I, Frank Keating, governor of the state of Oklahoma, do hereby proclaim April 12th, 1995, as the real birthplace of the hamburger in Tulsa Day.
Which is in all caps, by the way. And I love how it alternates between shade and, like, I guess still shade, but compliments.
Yeah, it's like, well, that was fine of you, but not, like, good.
Yeah. It's like giving a little golf clap of, like, yeah, sure, yeah, okay.
Like, good
but
for you.
And I love the real birthplace.
The real.
That is excellent. Yeah. In 1933, the family opened Weber's Superior Root Beer Stand in Tulsa, selling their hamburgers. So now, the case is closed.
Is it?
Nope.
Nope.
Definitely not. You're picking up on my bit here, Lauren. New Haven, Connecticut cites Lewis Lawson as the one who served the first burger in 1900. He operated a small lunch wagon that served steak sandwiches, but not wanting to waste any meat, he'd grind up the leftover meat and serve it between toasted bread. A plaque went up in 1961 proclaiming his restaurant to be the birthplace of the hamburger. I have to say, this is another thing I love of people just putting up plaques. Like,
yeah.
See? It's official now.
It's on a plaque. What do you want? Yeah.
You can't argue with a plaque.
Hmm.
In 1991, Lawson's grandson said, "We have signed, dated, and notarized affidavits saying we served the first hamburger sandwiches in 1900. Other people may have been serving the steak, but there's a big difference between a hamburger steak and a hamburger sandwich."
You tell them.
Yeah. And in 2000, the Library of Congress got involved, labeling Lewis's lunch a, quote, Connecticut legacy for, among other things, quote, the invention and commercial serving of one of America's favorites, the hamburger.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. And lastly.
So the case is still not closed?
No, the case is open, Lauren. It's still open. Clarinda, Iowa's Bert W. Gary, he doesn't necessarily claim to be the hamburger's inventor, but he did declare himself the hamburger industry's, quote, daddy, as of 1901 or 1902. And this burger was served on a bun. Made sure to specify that.
Okay.
But wait! At the 1904 St. Louis's World's Fair, the Tyrolean Alpine restaurant served hamburger steak, both plain and with onions. And this event introduced the hamburger to a lot of folks, and people loved it. At least one reporter put the invention of the hamburger to a vendor at this event, which brings us to the accursed Athens, Texas, Tulsa's worst enemy. Many Texans suspected the vendor in question was a man from Athens named Fletch Davis, or Old Dave. He owned a lunch counter in Athens, and one day he got the idea to make brown patties of ground beef on a grill, top it with a big old slice of raw onion, and sandwich it between these thick slices of toast. However, Old Dave does not appear on the official list of vendors from the World Fair. But he was definitely there. A columnist for the Dallas Morning News wrote in 1983, quote, "It took me years of sweat neck research before I finally determined, at least in mine and in some other Texas historian's estimation, that Fletcher Davis, also known as Old Dave of Athens in Henderson County, Texas, invented the hamburger sandwich." And that next year, a plaque went up outside where Old Dave's restaurant used to be, and the Texas state legislature debuted a bill to name Athens as the original home of the hamburger. So we got a lot of plaques. We got a lot of legislatures getting involved.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think it belongs to everyone.
That's very diplomatic of you.
Thank you. Yeah, I believe that all of these people invented it independently.
That's what I like to think when I come up with a song and I'm so impressed with myself. And then I realize it's tuned to a song that definitely already exists. I'm like, well, hopefully I just like invented this on my own. It wasn't just copying it and didn't realize. But yeah.
People could
come up with ideas separately, independently, and it'd be a very similar idea. Also of note, ketchup and mustard were becoming more common in American diners. So it makes sense that people would add them to their burgers.
Yeah. Yeah. Those were, those condiments were really coming up around the first couple decades of the 20th century there. Late 1890s through the early 20th century.
Yeah. Burger time, as they say. Upton Sinclair's 1906 book, The Jungle, eroded America's trust in chopped meat for several years, and this lower class association got attached to it. So people thought, well, if you couldn't afford safer, quotes, meat, then you would be eating this burger. But you'll never believe what was instrumental in changing that. Oh, in 1916... a fry cook out of Wichita, Kansas, named Walter Anderson, created square buns made with denser dough, denser than what was used for bread. Soon after, he quit his job and poured all his money into opening a diner in a converted trolley car where he served his burgers. A few years after that, in 1921, Anderson, along with Edgar Waldo Billy Ingram, founded White Castle Hamburger in Wichita, making White Castle the oldest hamburger chain. But they dealt with this nervousness around ground meat with a consistent product and a projection of safety, sanitation with their shiny white interiors.
Yeah, yeah. These white aprons, white caps. Yeah, very, very, everything very polished, very sterilized. They spent serious time and money on this. They would sponsor a study that was published almost a decade later in 1930 that reported a normal, healthy child could eat nothing but White Castle burgers and water and fully develop all its physical and mental faculties.
Wow.
The study did include the caveat that for that to be fully true, they should really add some calcium to their burger buns, which they then did. I'm going to say that's faulty nutritional advice, but you know, they were working on it. At any rate, they were doing some
White
things.
Castle was on the case. Skipping ahead to 1931, the cartoon strip Popeyes introduced the character J. Wellington Wimpy, better known as Wimpy. And Wimpy's whole thing was he loved hamburgers but rarely paid for them. He was a cheapskate. So he frequently tried to trick diners into paying for his burgers with his catchphrase, "I'd gladly pay you Tuesday for a hamburger today." And this character was huge in popularizing the burger in the United States, so much so that he went on to be the namesake of a burger chain called Wimpy's. After the founder died in 1978, apparently all 1,500 Wimpy's shut down in accordance with the founder's wishes. Though in 1954, Jay Lyons and Company purchased the franchise rights for England. And I've heard there are some still around in the U.S. I don't know. I literally only just learned about this whole thing, Wimpy from Popeye, Wimpy's, after Obama mentioned it in a recent speech. And I was like, huh. What?
Oh, yeah. I guess I grew up watching some of those old Popeye cartoons or maybe reading the comic strip when it was still... No, watching the cartoons, I think. And yeah, Wimpy definitely played a factor. And I could swear that as a child in the Midwest, I personally witnessed a Wimpy's, but maybe I've only ever seen photographs. It's really hard to say.
Well, listeners, if you've seen one, it's like we're talking about Bigfoot or something, let us know. But what about the cheeseburger?
No, what about it? I'm sure that one's much more straightforward.
Yes, obviously. So three cities lay claim to that innovation. You've got Pasadena, California, Denver, Colorado, and Louisville, Kentucky. So Pasadena's claim dates back to the 1920s, though the details other than that are pretty lacking. As for Denver, we have Louis Ballast, who allegedly registered the first trademark for the cheeseburger in 1935. But a restaurant in Louisville named Kalen's offered, quote, cheeseburgers with a space in between on its menu in 1934. Again, I imagine it just made sense to put cheese on there, you know?
Yeah, this is a tasty thing. We have this cheese. Yes.
It will melt. Yeah. In Glendale, California, in 1937, Bob Wyan of Bob's Pantry introduced the double-decker burger, a bun sliced into three with two patties. And then a barrage of fast food burgers.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. McDonald's got started in 1948, as did In-N-Out.
And In-N-Out was the first drive-through burger joint.
Burger King followed in Miami in 1954. Wendy's came along in 1969. And the timing of this had to do with the availability of freezers, of assembly lines, of things that enabled the production of standardized products quickly.
Yeah. Just so many chains. Steak and Shake, Castle Blanca, Red Castle, White Turret, White Tower, Crystal, A&W, Whataburger, Jack in the Box, Sonic, on and on.
On and on. And I love the regional... people get so strongly opinionated depending on what region you're
in.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. In 1978, Jimmy Buffett released Cheeseburger in Paradise, which I wanted to put in here because I thought I'd eaten at that restaurant, which is his sister Lucy's restaurant, Lulu's, in Gulf Shores, Alabama. But I learned that that seems like it was a retcon, so I've been living a lie, Lauren. The Hamburglar, the McDonald's town character, whatever it is called, was introduced in the 1970s, and Hamburger Helper came along in 1971.
Although veggie-based burger patties were around before the mid-1980s, they were popularized by the success of the brand Garden Burger in the mid-80s, starting in the mid-80s. And this was a patty originally made with stuff like oats, cheese, rice, and mushrooms by its creator, Paul Wenner, for his Oregon-based vegetarian restaurant, Garden House.
And then we get Shake Shack, which opened in 2004.
Yeah, the early 2000s into the 20-teens saw this huge burger boom in the U.S. All of these chains were opening, like fast casual chains. A lot of other restaurants got serious about making these like high-end burger options. Other brands like Umami Burger, Five Guys, Smash Burger. From 2010 to 2011 alone, fast casual burger sales jumped 21%. And around that time, the like better burger segment was worth $2.5 billion a year.
Wow.
Which was only like 4% of the total burger market at that time, but still like, woof.
Yeah.
And this was partially because of, so there were around that time, all of these movements to be healthier and more environmentally and socially conscious about food, and they were gaining traction again. That book, Fast Food Nation, The Dark Side of the All-American Meal, was published in 2001. It dealt with a lot of these issues. And since then, there has been like increasing attention to the responsible sourcing of quality and ethically produced meats, and to reducing meat intake in general.
Right.
And that burger boom went international, though. As of 2016, one in three restaurants in France had a burger on the menu, and 80% of those that did said it was their best-selling item.
Wow. I mean, they're good. It's just a good comfort food, like you said. So satisfying.
It's nice. It's nice to eat. Yeah.
Wow. Well, that was a real whirlwind. Legal documents, plaques, intrigue. And honestly, there's so much out there. We were already talking about revisiting some stuff from this one.
Yeah. I just found a trove of really great science pieces about what makes a burger a good burger, like chemically and physically, right before we came in. And so I really want to talk about that in the future. And I feel like there were a lot of other little side quests that I made myself ignore going through this research.
Mm-hmm. And we love a good side quest and turning them into whole episodes. So, listeners, if there's something particular you want us to revisit, just let us know.
Always. And we do have some mail from some listeners who have already written in. But first, we've got one more quick break for a word from our sponsor.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
And we're back with
listener mail.
The Krabby Patty. I'm sorry, everyone. I have failed. I did not bring up the Krabby Patty. It's okay. I will shake off this defeat. I knew I was forgetting something. And then, the crusty burger.
Oh, man.
I mean, cartoon burgers could be a whole episode on its own.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, another side quest for another day. In the meantime, Linda wrote, I was listening to your butter episode tonight, and when you talked about the possibility of making your own butter, you commented that you didn't know why anyone would want to do that. Well, I've actually done it many times, but only while working with kids. When teaching elementary school, I loved centering lessons around food during the Thanksgiving season. We even made bread one year, but that was with the help of a good friend who was really into bread making. We made butter several years as it was really easy and gave the students a chance to see where butter comes from. All it took was some heavy cream and enough small jars with tight lids so that every student had a jar. Then just pour some cream into the jars, tighten the lid, and start shaking. It was a fun, hands-on activity, and they got to spread their butter on some bread or crackers when they were done. It always turned out and was delicious as well. As a teacher and also someone who likes to cook from scratch, I've been amazed at how little some students know about where their food comes from. One year when substituting in a high school life skills class, we were planning a shopping list for a breakfast menu. One teenage girl was surprised that we'd need eggs to make French toast. I just couldn't imagine how you'd make French toast without eggs. Then she explained, you just pop the frozen French toast into a toaster. Wow, the things we learn from kids. I love this. This is a great activity.
Oh, yeah.
You know, might tire some kids out, but also right. You get butter at the end.
Yeah.
This is great for anyone who's, at home for Thanksgiving looking for activities with kids.
Yeah. Yeah. Solid. Highly, highly recommend that kind of thing. Anytime that there's something relatively undangerous and kind of physically laborious that you can just have a child do, mm-hmm. They're usually into it. They're burning energy, man.
Oh, yeah.
Susanna wrote, this may fall under the random section, but I wanted to tell you about my somewhat unorthodox experience of the American Thanksgiving dinner. I moved to the States for college, and during freshman year, my roommate invited me to her Korean-Italian-American home in Detroit for Thanksgiving. Her mom was a great cook and prepared a feast of Korean delicacies. But of course, there were also mashed potatoes and the mandatory pumpkin pie. For another Thanksgiving gathering, I visited my sister in Providence, and we decided to make traditional Polish potato pancakes as a side dish. Yet another year, I spent Thanksgiving alone and celebrated, despite having no national ties to the holiday, with a spread of all-American candies. In my experience, Thanksgiving is a delicious excuse for families and friends to gather for a huge dinner and mix whatever their cultural influences may be into the pot. And I love that.
I love that, too.
Yes. Aww.
One of my very favorite things, actually, is I love asking people what their traditional Thanksgiving meal is and just comparing, because there's history there, inevitably, of how this side dish got chosen over this side dish. And I love it.
And there's always like really impassioned family politics surrounding it. And and it's really fun. And everyone does have those very, very specific takes on dishes that that different family members insisted on and would not let go of. And
Yeah. I love it. And I also, a Thanksgiving with all American candies, that's great. very creative. I am a big fan.
Yes.
Thanks to both of those listeners for writing. If you would like to write to us, you can. Our email is hello@saverpod.com.
We are also on social media. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Saverpod. And we do hope to hear from you. Saver is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Thanks, as always, to our super producers, Dylan Fagan and Andrew Howard. Thanks to you for listening, and we hope that lots more good things are coming your way.